Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, I have a very cool guest named Andy Viteri. He is actually an immigrant to the United States and has built an amazing portfolio in a few different markets in Wisconsin. So really interested to hear his story today. How's it going, Andy?
Good. Thank you, Avery. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So first off, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you ended up in the U.S. and how you ended up in real estate.
Yeah, so I am from Ecuador originally in South America, and I've always wanted to come here. You know, I went to medical school down there, and I finished, all my pre-residency, pre-fellowship training down there. And as soon as I could, I was able to take my exams, get some experience in here, and start my journey over here. My wife and I moved to the U.S. initially in 2008. She did in 2012. Complete our training here, postgraduate training, and really have been on real estate not too long. The only experience that I had before diving into short-term rentals was just a little bit of private equity and REITs, basically nothing else. But got interested after reading your book, learning a lot from other docs as well. And we started a short-term rental journey last September, actually. So we're pretty new into the space. We've grown to 3 properties here in the state of Wisconsin, but we do live and manage these from Iowa.
Okay. How'd you end up in Iowa?
Well, once you come on a visa, you kind of have to do a few things. One of those is do a little bit of underserved work once you finish your training. Mm-hmm. We completed that in South Dakota, actually. Okay. But we're training in Houston, and fell in love with the Midwest and decided not to leave.
Okay. My husband's from the Midwest. They're very, really nice, down-to-earth people in the Midwest. Yeah. What part of Iowa?
In Des Moines.
Des Moines. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've been through Des Moines one time when I had a horrible travel experience and had to reroute to Des Moines and drive the rest of the way to Omaha. But anyway, so how did you end up choosing Wisconsin as your market to invest in?
Well, one of the few things as part of our initial research, you know, maybe as many of your, many of the people that are starting, you know, they want to be close by, you know, just test the waters. And when we started doing our analysis, we couldn't really find anything that fit what we wanted to do in the state of Iowa. So we started looking actually in Minnesota. And then we've traveled quite a bit to these areas. We like, you know, the scenery. We like what the nature has to offer over here. And did a little bit of learning about regulations, rules, and, you know, what the climate is in general for short-term rentals. And we actually narrowed down to 3 markets, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Branson. I actually spoke with Bill Beck down there, and we actually mm-hmm. went down there. Very nice place, very nice area. So, in the end, we chose this place because the state is very flexible, very host friendly, and we just found opportunities. Really, we found the 3 properties that we manage right now, I think, in a very different markets that I guess what your audience is used to. These are not, you know, magnet markets, honestly, but they are very touristy. They are very unique. And so far, I think they have performed really well.
Okay. So what, before I move on to the next question. So had you ever been to Wisconsin and Minnesota before when you started looking at these and you knew these areas and said, okay, I think this is somewhere I want to invest?
Yep. Yep. It's you know, we used to visit and vacation quite a bit here as well.
Okay.
Brainerd and Lake Superior, North Shore of Minnesota as well. But over there is a little more tricky with, you know, bans and moratoriums that they have.
So that's definitely something that I want to highlight about. So you're talking about investing in these tertiary markets, that you started with one that you know. And I think that's where people can get tripped up when they start getting sucked into this. Oh, it has to be a market that nobody's in. I have to go somewhere where nobody's talking about it. And they end up, they just look, you know, maybe they read some lists from some data companies and they say, oh, this looks good. Let me go to this place. And they know nothing about it. And you can make a lot of mistakes when you don't know a market and you don't know who the guest avatar is, who's coming there and why and what time of year. You can really make a mistake just running off and buying something in a market that you have zero familiarity with. So I think that's really cool that you started with something that you knew mm-hmm. in Minnesota, then realized, oh, you know what? This may not be the best place with the bands and things, but there's this similar market next door in Wisconsin. Let's try this. And so that's kind of my thing that I've been noticing lately and kind of hoping that people pay attention to is like, if the market that you're familiar with doesn't work, we'll find a market that's similar to the market that you know that does work. And I think apparently you did a really good job of that.
You know, I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. And I think it's important to actually go there. You know, Bill Fay talks about this all the time, like just go there and see it. I mean, Wisconsin is a big state. Minnesota is a big state. You probably, we've visited quite a few of the, you know, places that we want to be, but I've never been to Rome, Wisconsin, you know, but we've been to the Dells, right? And we know the Dells very well. So, you know, coming over here and actually looking at the market, what's around, talking to other people, which I think is so important to talk to other hosts, see how they're doing, who they're working with, how's the legal climate for the municipality or town you're at. And I think that, you know, that is crucial just beyond the numbers, is actually seeing where you're going to be.
Yeah, very, very, very important. And what market specifically are you in Wisconsin?
We're in central Wisconsin. We have two properties. One is in Rome, Wisconsin, and the other one is in Stratford, which is a more of a rural setting, Stratford out there in between Marshfield and Wausau. And then we have a third property about an hour from Twin Cities in Minneapolis in Turtle Lake.
This episode is brought to you by the Premier Short-Term Rental Facebook group. Short-term rental, long-term wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. This is the biggest independently owned and operated STR Facebook group, and it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carr. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth on Facebook.
So what do people come to do in these markets? What are they doing when they come there?
The property in Rome, I think, is our prime location currently and the oldest of our investments. And this property is about 5 miles from Sand Valley, which is one of the top 10 golf resorts in the state. And we're also next to Lake Pittenwell. I think you can see it in the back right there. Mm-hmm. That one over there is the second largest inland lake in Wisconsin. And, you know, most of our guest avatar is going to be their golfers, which is, oh, I think, you know, a good type of avatar you want to have. And or families, people that like to boat, pontoon, you know, just have a quiet time. Our market capture is mainly three cities, or I would say four potentially, is number one, Chicago here. We have Madison, Milwaukee, and Minneapolis, which are large, you know, urban centers that, you know, people don't want to stay there necessarily if they want a vacation. They want to go up to the Northwoods. They want to go up to, you know, the wilderness. And I think we're in a prime location for something like that. In addition, out here, we are about 45 minutes from Wisconsin Dells, which, you know, is a nationally recognized market for like water parks and things like that. The property in Turtle Lake is literally the boundaries of the Wisconsin Norwoods. So you have your hunters, your fishermen, and we are close to one of the St. Croix casinos in Turtle Lake. So there's a lot of draw there for that as well. And our third property was actually a bit of a, I don't know, opportunity cost type of thing. This is an acreage that we have in there with a private lake. There's really not a whole lot of attractions down there, but the property is quite unique. It's an Amish built, fully updated log cabin, 10 plus acres. It has a lake, and we are, you know, within 20 minutes from two large regional medical centers. So there's a lot of draw for that as well. That property was launched about a month and a half ago, and is already doing really well.
So what are the seasonalities for these little markets that are in? I mean, I hate to say little markets, for these different areas that you're in.
Yep. So obviously, when you are in the north, you're going to have seasons. There's no doubt about that. And our first two properties were launched in the low season, or what you would call the low season. And your high season is going to be now. Like, it starts in May, ends by Labor Day, and you know, high season, you're back to the gills. You really have to work with your cleaning crew and your members, because they do have quite a bit of work. But even in the low season, we have been booked pretty much every week. And that is because I think a combination of what our attractions are. So if you know, like you say, your guest avatar, and you're lakefront on our property and is, you know, fall or winter, you want to have a hot tub, right? That's overlooking the lake, really pretty, and attractions that will bring people in no matter the season. And Turtle Lake's a prime example of that, because, you know, we're lakefront there, we have the amenities, and we're literally a nine-minute walk from the casino, which is indoor, right? That's an example of that. Here's the same thing with the Wisconsin Dells. You know, they have indoor water parks. And yes, it's not the same. Our occupancy and the revenues are not the same than in the summer, but still, we're still profitable during the winter.
Okay. Because that was going to be my next question, because I have never been to Wisconsin. The furthest north in the Midwest I've been is Omaha, but I could not possibly drive there in the wintertime because there's so much snow. So that was going to be my next question is, do you have guests in the wintertime, or is it accessible, or are these places like areas that the counties maybe take care of the roads?
Yeah, counties take care of the roads, and we have our own crews that come in and clear our driveways. Those are long and very spacious, but you like, I will have to keep them clean. But you know, that was one of my concerns without having any experience. But what we've noticed is that hasn't been an issue at all. People do come in. We always advertise that, you know, the roads are plowed and paved, but you occasionally are going to need an all-wheel drive vehicle. So it has not been a detractor.
Well, that's good. And I love to hear that, because there's so many things that I think that I know I got hung up on when I was buying my first few that I think other people can get hung up on too, that they think is going to like kill the property, and it ends up not even being something that ever gets mentioned by guests. So,
not at all. And of course, nobody has complained about access to the place ever.
Yeah. And as I'm a big believer in, as long as you make sure they aren't surprised by that, if there is an access problem or like a steep road or a windy road or something, as long as you make sure they know that, like at the time that they book several times, then typically you're not going to have a big problem with people mentioning that in your reviews.
Yes, 100%. I agree.
So you mentioned that you had zero experience and you bought your first one last year.
Yes. We closed in May, and the Wisconsin State's great with regulations. Our town of Rome here where I am right now is actually all day Eagle Cabin. It's our first one. It has its own set of regulations and conditional use permits that you need to get, as well as a bunch of inspections. It's a little bit of paperwork, and it's expensive to keep it up. You need a license for the town and everything. So we were able to launch in September. And since then it's been fine. We just renewed and that hasn't been too much of a hassle. The other two properties, really, there's no regulation at all. You can do whatever you want.
I know there's probably a lot of our listeners who are in that same position that you were in maybe early last year of like, okay, I think I want to do this. I kind of have some markets picked out, but I'm scared. Like, I don't know how to take the next step. So what advice would you have for them as someone who was just in that position last year, and then now you're on your third property already?
Yep. What I would say is read your book. I think that was pivotal for me is about the mindset. I think that, you know, you need to have a solid foundation as to, first of all, what it is that you want to do. And number two, you know, the basic tools. And, there is, to me, you know, no better training, like in medicine. You know, they can teach you how to do surgery, but you're never going to be confident doing the surgery until you do it. And it's the same thing with markets. I think that at some point, you know, if you have a reasonable understanding of the market you're into, and you've been there, you've rented Airbnbs in there, you've seen how it works, and you have a basic knowledge of, you know, what a short-term rental management would be, the best way to learn is just to take the plunge. And yes, I mean, you may make mistakes. Could I bought a better property? I think so. There's always a chance that could have been the case. I think, you know, we've been fortunate, maybe lucky, I don't know. But, you know, whatever didn't work on any of our properties, we made them work. Like, if there were changes that we needed to do, as we learn more, as we network with other people, we made some adjustments. And, you know, you see that immediately in your revenues.
I want to tease out a couple of things you just said, because you said maybe we were lucky. And then your very next sentence was, well, you know, if something wasn't working, we figured out how to make it work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key to the luck. You make your own luck. If something isn't working, you figure out how to make it work and you pivot and you do something a little bit different. And I've seen investors over the years who, you know, maybe they'll have one thing that is like maybe, you know, $1,500, $2,500 fix, and they want to sell the house over it rather than figure out how, then just spend the money to fix the thing and then you're okay. But they get so overwhelmed by this one thing. I'm trying to think of a specific example, but I can't, of course. But, you know, you get so fixated on the one thing that isn't working that you kind of lose sight of the forest for the trees. Like, oh, I can't make this thing work. But if you back up, you're like, oh, wait a minute. This isn't that big of a fix. So if I do this, then I'm good, and not like, oh, if I can't figure out this thing, then I can't figure out all the other things. And then it's just this big psychological block that people get. So I think that for everybody listening, the thing you want to take from what Andy just said is you make your own luck by figuring out if something doesn't work, you pivot and you find the thing that does.
That is correct. It's very easy to fall into this mentality of like narrow tunnel vision. And especially if you're starting and then all of a sudden you have a five-figure problem in your hands. Okay. You know, you take the pause, take a breath, and don't lose, you know, the sight of the forest for the tree. Like you said, we did have our fair share of things, you know, contractors wise, you know, repairs wise that we had to do. But if you don't lose focus of where your end goal is going to be, I think, you know, in the end, things are going to work out just fine.
I totally agree with that. So let's talk about your properties. How big are they? What sizes are these things?
These properties are ranging from 2,600 to about 3,500 square feet.
And are they two bedrooms, three bedrooms?
We have this one right here is a 3-3. Mm-hmm. Turtle Lake is a 4-4. And the one in Stratford is a 3-2.
Okay. So three and four bedrooms. And what kind of revenue are you projecting on these guys to do for annually?
Well, so far in the first 8 months, we're already at $200,000 combined. Take into consideration that, you know, we started in September with this one. We started in November with Turtle Lake and a month and a half ago with the property in Stratford.
Not bad. And what are the purchase prices on these, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. This house right here was $490,000. The house in Turtle Lake was $435,000. And believe it or not, and that's what I said about opportunity cost, the Stratford property, which is the biggest property and the one with the most land, it was
$350. Oh, wow.
I know.
Those are great prices.
It was really good. Yes. So we did 10% down on the first two, and then we have a 20% down on the third.
Okay. So you're not into these too much, at least on down payments at all. How much work did you have to do on them?
Very minimal, because the first two properties were turnkey.
Okay.
The furniture was already there. We just had to buy a few things, maybe a new grill, nothing like that, nothing more than that. And the third property, the Amish-built log home, we have to fully furnished. And we went with Judy Whitlock. She's a quite famous interior designer. And she did the whole thing. She even came herself, and we furnished for about $45,000.
Okay.
Short-Term Shop Plus has live and recorded sessions on the following topics: creating compelling listings, marketing your STR property, setting up a new listing, managing from a distance, finding and acquiring your first or next STR, live revenue management audits with the pros, analyzing an STR for gross revenue. All of this and much, much more is now available at your fingertips with Short-Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know to have success in the world of vacation homes and STR. Please join us at stsconsultation.com. That's stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com to learn more.
Did you know that we're officially back in a buyer's market? That's right. Even though interest rates continue to rise, they are causing prices to fall. So there's finally room for you to do regular real estate investor things that we couldn't do for so long, like gasp. Negotiate, make lower offers, ask for sellers to cover some of your closing costs. So it's a really great time to buy in terms of being able to get a lower purchase price and being able to negotiate. So if you're looking for your first or next short-term rental, it's a perfect time to reach out to us at the Short Term Shop. Let our team of agents in any of our true vacation market destinations help you find the perfect investment. Jump on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected to get started. We are brokered by eXp Realty. See y'all over there. What would you say has been the biggest obstacle in terms of getting these three up and running in these markets?
Property here in Rome was the town. That was overwhelming, to say the least, just because, again, we had no experience and everything. When you listen to the groups and you talk to, you know, co-hosts, or you have your little Facebook group in there and they talk about it is and how people didn't get permitted, you freak out. And that literally happened to us. Like, are we going to have issues because of how tall our stairs are on our deck? I don't know. Right. That was number one. And number two was just the uncertainty. Like at the beginning, you have, you know, like we talked earlier, an idea of what you're going to do, an educated guess on many things, and then just turn that into action. But after your first property, I think finding the other two weren't as difficult. And it hasn't been, I would say, not even half the amount of work that we had to put on the other two.
I want to hear more about having the hard time getting permitted, because I think that's a really big one. I would say like the biggest hater comment that I get on all of our social media is like, oh, the regulations are crushing everybody everywhere. And that's 100% not true. But when you get in a situation where you are dealing with permitting and regulation, so what happened and how did you deal with it?
So when you came here, basically you have to get a conditional use permit. And that takes a little while. It's expensive and it does take a little while. You have to have a building inspector to come in and take a look at things. And I would say this, you know, if I'm saying that they were picky, that's an understatement. Like I said, on the decks, we actually had an inch difference in one of our steps. And that was a big hurdle just to fix, you know. So that took a little while. And once that's done, you have to have a public hearing, you know, neighbors, if neighbors are, you know, don't want. This is a very upscale area for the people that golf. So a lot of neighbors don't want short-term rentals. So one of the things that we decided to do is just be neighborly, right? I mean, I think it's very important to be neighborly and just, you know, be respectful of what they've built. A lot of people retire in these areas. So we went and visited with our neighbors. We talked to them. We developed a friendship and we said, okay, well, you know, this is our business plan. This is what we're trying to do. We're not trying to bring people here to party. We're not trying to bring people here that are going to really cause trouble. You know, we're catering to golfers, we're catering to families. And we didn't have really any pushback or objection from our immediate neighbors to do this. I think one of the things that we wanted to do from the get-go was to make sure that we had enough land to be far away enough, but still within, you know, a neighborhood so that, you know, our chances of disrupting anything or, you know, whatever bad guess that you may get, is not that big of an issue.
Well, that sounds like, I don't want to say a lot of work, but I know a lot of neighbors would not be okay with that. So, I mean, did they give you any pushback at all? Or they just said, no, we don't have a problem.
No, they say they didn't have a problem. But I think it was crucial for us to go there and introduce ourselves. You know, my wife, my kids, our little Frenchie. We all went there and said, this is us. This is our family business. And just like we're doing right now, you know, we told them what we do. We're in medicine. This is what we're doing. And, you know, they have been super supportive, actually. You know, sometimes, you know, after guests come in or when they are around, because they don't live here all the time either, which is helpful. You'll see them around just checking our property, make sure things are okay. You know, if there's been a storm or something, I've gotten a phone call and say, hey, you know, there's a storm. There's a branch over there that fell and I just took it for you. So very, very nice, very cordial relationship with them.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I know a lot of people aren't that lucky, but that is really awesome. So we talked about financing. So before we get to the last three questions of the show, is there anything about your short-term rental journey so far that you feel like the listeners could benefit from hearing about?
I think that take the plunge. I think it's important to analyze, but try to stay away from analysis paralysis. And as much as I like, short-term rentals, and I think it has been probably our most powerful investment so far, I think it's important to diversify. Short-term rentals is part of our portfolio, but it's not all of our portfolio.
Well, let's hear about that really quick. What else do you own besides short-term rentals? I didn't even ask that.
Yeah, so we invest in the markets. Actually, most of our net worth, I guess, is in the markets in low-cost, broadly diversified mutual funds or index funds.
Okay.
We have some money on private equity. We have some money on QOC funds, and which are the opportunity zones funds. And now we have short-term rentals here.
Okay. Yes, it always is good to diversify across different asset classes for sure. Okay, Andy, so last three questions of the show. First, what advice would you give 20-year-old Andy?
You know, fight for your dreams. I think that, being a contrarian is a good thing. And I guess that's brought me a lot of joy, but also a lot of struggle over the years. And I think that, as long as you believe in yourself, you can get far. I mean, we come from... When I was 20 years old, we came from nothing. We had very little down in Ecuador. It's a third world country. There are, different struggles that we don't face here. And we're grateful for that and for the opportunity the country has given to us. And but we never really lost sight of what we wanted to do.
Very good advice. Mm-hmm. Second question, what advice would you give a new investor who's looking to get started today?
Read. I think that it'll be important to take a copy of your book. It's a great, solid foundation. We never did any sort of like masterminds or anything like that because so much information is out there for free from good people like you, from good people like Bill Faith. I think that Bill was instrumental. I've been on the phone with him multiple times, and he'll just pick up the phone and talk to you. And information is out there. Just have the patience and the endurance, I guess, to just... Never stop learning.
Never stop learning. Really good advice. And last question, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
I gave this a great deal of thought. And it's a book that may not apply to everyone, but there is a book called The White Coat Investor by Jim Daly. It's a book that I picked up in 2019 and it's very thin and is geared towards healthcare professionals. And it was a mindset changer because, many docs, when they come in, you live like a resident, so very basic modest salary until you graduate, and that was in 2018 for me. My net worth was negative, 40,000 or something like that. But when I picked that book, it pretty much brings you down to earth because there is this delayed gratification for people. Oh, I'm making an attending salary, a physician salary. I'm going to splurge on the $1 million home, and the $500,000 whatever, right? And I think that, the thing that helped me the most was your best side gig is how much you don't spend. If you can live a frugal life without being cheap, I think that you can accomplish many, many things. So it's a great book for that. And it teaches you common sense investing. And I think that has been the key to start where we are.
All right. No one has recommended that one yet. So great recommendation. Well, Andy, thank you so much for coming on. Lots of really great information today. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, how can they do that?
So we are on Instagram and we're also on Facebook. Our Instagram account is Sasha Stays WI. And basically, this is our property manager company that we've created to manage all the other houses or properties that we have.
All right. Well, thank you again, Andy, so much for coming on, and we will catch you later.
Thank you, Avery. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.